What's this? A cougar and a ute sharing the same podcast? That can only mean you're listening to State of Sports Utah with Jason Stoll and Jake Lukler.
Hello and welcome to State of Sports Utah.
What was
dude,
that?
It's freaking October, baby. Spooky season.
Oh, don't. Oh, okay. All right. Here I was just thinking, because we talked about how the intro is the same every time, that you're just like, you have to spice it up.
It is. It's a conscious thing. I went to say, what's up, everybody? And it just didn't feel right, man. It just didn't feel right.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm
well,
sure it didn't.
On that note, hey, everybody. Welcome into the podcast. This is Jason Stoll with my counterpart and just nasty, dirty Ute fan, Jake Lukler.
Guilty as charged. Although I did shower today, Jason, so I'm not that filthy or nasty.
Oh, that's good. No, Jake, it's your soul. Your soul is at stake here.
Right. Well, nothing could be done about that. I'm a sinner, and I refuse to repent on this one.
Well, it's a good thing that your sins do not prevent us from being friends. Most of the time, except for that, you know, one game a year.
Most years.
You're right. This year, you are guilt sin free the whole season.
Yep.
And our friendship can blossom. Yep. That's the real reason they're taking pauses. Yep. It's just for the sake of our friendship.
Yep. So that way, it doesn't put too much strain.
Well, guys, we are going to talk some actual football, I suppose. A little bit more of a chill week this week, because we're both chilling. We didn't win.
We didn't lose.
Yeah.
It's a bye week. We're big chilling.
Much needed bye week. And very, very nicely timed. I always appreciate every other year when the Pac-12 gives us a bye week, right around conference.
Yeah, kind of.
I always appreciate
kind of early mid-season. We're not quite mid-season. Early mid-season.
I mean, you throw in fall camp, and it's about
right.
Halfway through.
Well, and it came at a good time, as we kind of mentioned last week. You know, both teams have dealt with some injuries, so it was perfectly timed for both teams. Hopefully, again, we just had some chance to recover, but you know, we'll delve into some of the injuries a little bit later in the podcast in one of our segments, but let's recap weeks 5 and 6. Jake, what do you think?
Well, week 6 was a bit of a snooze fest, at least for our respective teams. For other teams, though, great games, not a snooze fest at all. But as for week 5, there was, Utah didn't do so hot. The injuries kind of finally caught up with us. We went on the road to a tough Oregon State team. The offense really had its struggles, and just, you know, like I said, the injuries really kind of caught up with us here, and we took our first loss of the season, 4-1. Which, I mean, if you had told me at the beginning, you know, before the season started, that going into the bye week, we were 4-1, all without the Cam Rising, Brant Keithy, and the laundry list of players that are injured, if you had told me that we had gotten to this point of the season and were 4-1, I would have been ecstatic. I would have taken that deal in a heartbeat. So, you know, it sucks to lose a game like that, you know. But, you know, undefeated seasons, this was not real. It wasn't really on the table for this year anyways. I wasn't expecting it. So, you know, had to get that first loss out of the way. You know, and honestly, Oregon State's a good team, so not ashamed to lose to them at all.
Right, and I mean, it kind of, Utah has been in this position, it feels like, multiple times and still ended up in that conference championship, you know, game.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, it's still very possible that we end up in the conference championship. Don't get me wrong, a lot of things got to change. You know, offense, it's got to get better. And once again, you know, we'll talk about it, you know, in the next segment a bit more. But, you know, injuries have really stacked up, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And, you know, as much as you can say next man up, when you start getting into, you know, when it's not just the twos stepping in for the ones, but it starts to become the threes and the fours having to step up, you know, there's going to be a gap in talent no matter what. And so, you know, offense has got to get better, but it's also got to get healthy. You know, it's less of a, you know, licking your wounds and more like getting out of the hospital, getting, you know, your stitches patched and you're, you know, getting the casts off and getting out of the hospital.
Well, for the BYU side of things, just a really solid week for that week five. Taking on Cincinnati, yeah, at home, your first home Big 12 game, ended up being the highest attended game since 2009. Utah, actually, that game against Utah in 2009. So it's been a hot minute. We've had some, I think, some more like recent games, like Utah in 2022. I think Arizona State.
We didn't play last year.
Or sorry, yeah, 21. And Baylor
didn't put. Oh yeah,
Baylor in 22. There have been some games that have been really well attended recently. So this was kind of like the building point, the culmination of like all these recent successes, yeah, and more fans kind of engaging or re-engaging in attending games at less. And okay, and so it was a huge crowd. And obviously it's great to get, you know, to have that attendance paid off with the win, which BYU was able to muster.
And
so,
if I'm not mistaken, Jason, this is the first Big 12
win,
isn't it?
Yes, so
first official in-conference Big 12 win. I mean, that's a big deal.
And I think if you look at the other teams that are new to the conference, right, so Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF, they are all winless in the Big 12. BYU is the only team with a win in the Big 12, and even overall, BYU's record, they outside of, you know, 4 yeah, and 1 BYU, all of the rest are 500 or below. So that jump, you know, really going from G5 to Power 5, it's the gap is big. It's you know, it's a significant,
yeah,
grind. So
for sure,
it's something to keep an eye on. You know, I think the fact that BYU played one of those new Big 12 members and hasn't, you know, had a,
yeah,
win against an original Big 12 member. It's something to watch, and I'm interested to see.
Yeah.
Still confident in where BYU can finish in regards to the rest of the conference, but definitely will be interesting to see at the end of the season, you know, where each of those new Big 12 teams kind of stacks up. So
for sure.
Yeah, I mean, lots to look, look into and look forward to, but good start getting,
yeah,
getting that win. So,
and I completely agree, Jason. Now, moving on to our next segment here is the thing that we keep dancing around. And that's, you know, coming off going into a bye week, we always kept talking about injuries, but I just thought it'd be interesting if we could just compile, you know, to the best of our knowledge, what the injuries are. You know, we keep talking about how they're stacking up, they're getting big. So why don't we dive in to just how many injuries are there, right? Now, obviously, college universities don't follow the same rules as NFL. They don't have to report injuries. They don't have to disclose anything.
BYU and Utah are
and
both
so,
notoriously bad with being like,
oh,
wish-washy about disclosing
exactly
injuries and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. You know, and I, for one, I totally understand that. You know, why give your opponent more information than they need, right? Than you have to give them, right? So I get it, but this is just, you know, our kind of list. Perhaps, you know, full disclosure, we could be forgetting people here, but this is just kind of our best job here. So Utah has, as from what I know of, two season-ending injuries, one running back, Mekhi Bernard, and two defensive end, Logan Fano. You know, both season-ending. Logan Fano just had his ACL torn in the Oregon State game. Mekhi Bernard, right after the Florida game, had an, you know, off-the-field injury. And then
up for Logan Fano. Like, I know we get the rivalry banter and betrayal, yeah, whatever. Like, when it comes to those, like, injuries, like, I was gutted for Logan. It's tough to have, you know, now two season-ending injuries. So hopefully he can recover from that and get back on the field, because him and his brother have been awesome. They've been killing it.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. It's heartbreaking, especially just because he was tearing it up. He was an absolute monster out there. He was a terror for all things, you know, opposing offenses. And so really hope he gets a speedy recovery. So thank you for that, Jason. All right. So after that, get ready, Jason, because I got quite the laundry list here. So I broke it down by position group because that kind of helped me keep things straight. First off, we have three quarterbacks that are injured. Cam Rising, he also, just quick little thing here, Cam Rising actually revealed today that his injury was a lot more serious back in the Rose Bowl when he got injured, was a lot more serious than was originally led on to believe. Not only did he tear his ACL, but pretty much every ligament in his knee, you know? And so it basically just means that he was never, you know, never really had a chance to be ready for the Florida game. At this point, I question if he'll be ready at all this season, and if he doesn't just take a medical redshirt, I don't know, or even if he qualifies, I don't know. So, Cam Rising, he's one. Brandon Rose, he's missed significant time, got injured during fall camp. There's rumored he's coming back, but who knows? Bryson Barnes got injured in the Florida State game. Then we have two. So that's all three quarterbacks. Then we have two defensive ends, Van Fillinger and Connor O'Toole, both injured in fall camp. Defensive tackle, Samote Pepa, has missed significant time and got injured kind of with a nagging injury. Brent Keithy, obviously, tore his ACL last year, still has yet to come back. Three running backs, four, including Mekhi Bernard. Jaquinnen Jackson, nagging injury, been on and off. Chris Curry, Charlie Vincent, both, you know, Chris Curry, season ender last year, barely, you know, just was kind of coming back, then re-injured himself. Then Charlie Vincent got injured this last game. Let's see, we have our kicker got injured a couple weeks ago, and that one just bugs the heck out of me, the fact that our kicker gets injured when no one even touches him. I don't know. We got an offensive lineman, Johnny Maia, got hurt, and then two wide receivers, Mekhi Pittman and Muneer McClain, and all those, you know, most of them being on offense. This also doesn't include other players that are currently not injured but have been injured throughout the season, missing significant time. Devon Vele and Junior Tafuna being two of the most prime examples, but not the only examples, Jason. So I know that was a big, long spiel. Honestly, I'm exhausted from talking just from listening that. I feel depressed. I feel like I need to, you know, huddle up under a rock and, you know, just after listing all those star players, just, you know, long list of injuries. It's incredibly depressing.
Well, and I think, like, the fact that Utah is 4-1, you know, with that laundry list of names, like, it's great. You know, you had multiple Power 5 opponents that you picked up wins there. So, I don't know. It is tough to, you know, to say how much of this is like really on scheme or talent, and is just, I mean, on talent because of the injuries, and so you're putting lesser talent on the field, you know. But BYU has, I mean, has their own share of injuries. I'm not going to have a list, I think, anywhere close to as long as that one was. But you had, and I mean, everyone knows Ropitai, and then a Ropati. That blew my mind. I think it's actually pronounced Ropati, which, like, I thought it was Ropitai this whole time. Anyway, him and then Micah Harper are both out for the season. That's before we even played any games, so it's been so long that.
Yeah.
And then you've got Talon Alfrey, which again, these bye, hopefully with all the, I mean, with all these injuries, hopefully with the, the bye week and having that little bit of time, we start to see some of these guys working their way back. But Talon Alfrey is one of those guys. Safety would be huge for positional depth because it's definitely a shallow position and more of a concern. So hopefully, I think he's officially from BYU is 1 to 2 weeks, where they were saying before the Cincinnati game. So he's right on that edge. I think if he's not back this game, he will be next game. So excited about that. But Ben Bywater remained out for the Cincinnati game. That's big. Linebacker, you know, your captain, your leader, really, of the defense. That's a critical loss. And, you know, Taggart is a great talent, but to lose kind of that veteran leadership type player on the field is big. And then Aiden Robbins still out. Kingston still out. This is all like immediately after the Cincinnati game, by the way. I mean, some of these statuses could be updated and we'll know more this week.
I mean, the thing about coming off a bye week is there's nothing else to, you know, all our information is a week old.
Lapuao, he's offensive lineman, was out for that Cincinnati game, and then Cody Epps, the kind of saga with Cody Epps continues with him being banged up.
He's the one that got hurt in the he got hit real bad last year. In like, wasn't that the Arizona game in the Raiders arena?
No,
wasn't that him?
The Arizona game was 2021. So it's been a couple years. That guy, I'm trying to remember his name off the top of my head. He retired from football, and that was scary. Yeah,
I can imagine after a hit like that. Yeah, that makes sense.
So those are kind of the guys that, again, I know of as of, like, immediately after the Cincinnati game. So decent amount of injuries, but, I mean, as with all of them, hopefully we get to see them back here. But
yeah, hopefully next time we touch on this subject, hopefully by next podcast, both of our lists will be much shorter. You know, you hate to see these athletes get hurt.
Yep.
All right, Jason, let's move on to something a little less depressing and perhaps something a little bit more controversial. What do you say? All right, so Jason, as I'm sure anyone who's read any sort of sports news or consumed sports media may have heard, the University of Utah's Crimson Collective just made a huge NIL move in which they gave all 85 scholarship football players a lease to a new Ram truck, 2024 Ram truck. Now, the question is here, so this is obviously a big move. It's a big step forward. It's, you know, it was so big it caught national media attention, right? So the question is, what are the ramifications of this? Is this going too far? Is this just, you know, beating everyone else to the punch? You know, what's the next thing that could happen with this, Jason? I want to get your reaction as a BYU fan, you know, when you heard this news and how you feel about it now.
So, I mean, maybe this is going to be a slightly different take. I think superficially it sounds like really crazy and, oh my gosh, they're giving every player a truck. What? How can they do that? Yada, yada. Or like, wow, that's so crazy. I think, honestly, when you look at the, like, the actual setup of the NIL deal, it's cool. It's great for the players. But I think it's pretty on par with deals that I've seen across the country in that they are not truly gifting cars to players.
True.
Players are on the hook for taxes. They are leasing these cars to the athletes. Jake, maybe you could expound a little bit more on like what that actually means, if you know. But it's not like they're getting these free trucks that are just theirs right now. You know, if they leave the program,
very true,
the car's going back to the dealership, right? I mean, it's so like it's a cool and unique NIL deal, and I don't think that aspect of it should be taken away at all. And obviously, it grabbed a ton of headlines. Because it does. It's cool, and it's going to be fun for those, you know, for those players to, you know, potentially ditch their, you know, 2001 Toyota Corolla for like a sick brand new truck. Like that's great. But again, I think looking at the actual, like, you know, nitty gritty of it, I don't think there's anything wrong with what they did. Just based on how they're actually executing it, if that makes sense. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm bashing it or something, because I know there've been some discussions and some less than logical and more rivalry fueled takes on it from that direction, you know. But
you're always going to have those.
That's just my perspective. And I will say this as well. Like, I've heard from multiple people that BYU was supposed to be getting this exact same deal, this exact same setup, but they were pushing to get it, like, athlete-wide for every scholarship player of all sports was what I've been hearing, which would, like, I don't know that that's going to happen, and is a pretty, it's a pretty classic BYU move to do. Like, we really, really care about every single sport and pushing and trying to push it.
I don't know. I mean, this is a pretty sweetheart deal. I struggle to see like, the women's swim team getting this.
Right.
Stuff. You know? Like, I just don't see it. I mean, maybe BYU pulls that kind of thing off, and I'll eat my words, but, like, that's a hard sell.
So, again, like, I think from my perspective, if that really is what has held it up, or is holding it up, I think you gotta do some introspection on what you're getting. But,
maybe a little bit.
But, again, if you see, if, like, I mean, as a Utah fan, if you guys see it pop up, and are tempted to be like, ha, see, little brother, you're just copying what we did. Like, it has, again, from I've heard for a minute that, like, this deal was in the works, and BYU is just really slow with things. So, but, again, I mean, good props to you, Utah, because you didn't muck it up and bog it down with administrative things, and you got it first. So, there you go.
I mean, I suppose that's true. And, oh, I had a big point to say here. Dang it. Anyways. I guess the thing I was going to say was, you know, Ken Garf, you know, this is coming through them, this NIL deal, and they do sponsor both schools. So, I mean, it does give some credit to what you've been hearing, and, you know, to this claim that you're making here. So, you know, just wanted to throw that out there. You know, they do sponsor both schools.
Right.
So, and as far as my take on this, you know, I think that, I mean, this is, I mean, it's not as grandiose, you're right, as gifting a truck.
Which, let's be honest, they're, like, you know that there are some players in college football, like Caleb Williams is not, he probably has multiple gifted free cars. Like,
oh, he's been gifted
plenty
of things. I mean, the man, we're up to the point where he can make more in NIL money, you know, than his rookie contract. in the NFL, right? Like, he has actively stated, I will stay if I don't like the team that is likely to, to draft me.
Well, and what is cool about it is that you know, the fourth string safety that's on scholarship at Utah is driving a new truck, and that's the gist of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, so from what I understand, the deal of this is it comes in a 6-month, you know, potentially renewed lease. Players that graduate or leave for the portal, they will be able to keep the truck until that six months is over. As long as they maintain a scholarship on the team, the lease will renew. Right? And, you know, it is suggested that, you know, next year, new players come in, they will receive a truck as well. It is presumed that. I think this is a big deal. I think, you know, it is a big move. It's a statement piece, I think, is really what it is. It is Utah's way of saying, you know, hey, if USC and Colorado and teams like that can go out and basically just buy a new team with NIL and the transfer portal, you know, Utah can make a statement with that too. And I think it's, you know, I don't think it's wrong per se. I think it's just, this is just the world we live in now. You know, this is how college football is. And if you don't play the game, you're going to get the game played on you.
Utah and BYU have to be creative in the NIL sphere.
Yes.
Like, they do not bring in anywhere close to the amount of money that a Notre Dame or USC is, or
Georgia,
Ohio
State, Alabama,
right? Those schools are bringing in. And so any sort of unique angle that you can bring into, you know, the sphere is great.
Any sort of headlines.
The walk-on scholarships, but with the Built Beer... Built Beer, that's definitely a BYU sponsor. With the Built Bar sponsorships, like, that was huge. And that grabbed national headlines with BYU getting their walk-ons a scholarship. That's a huge advantage and sort of
recruiting, that's a big deal.
You know, angle or pitch that you can sell to people. So, yeah, I mean, I love it. I really, like, I hope BYU actually is in on it and gets something, you know, done similar.
Yeah.
And like you said, it brought a ton of attention to, like, the program for Utah. And, it's unique. Which is exactly what we need. So
yeah,
I like it. Well, let's get into our prediction portion of the show.
Oh boy,
I am actually excited for once for this week. I wonder why that would be, Jake.
I don't know, Jason.
Let's recap if you wouldn't mind, there, Jake. What was our prediction record like, looking like after last week's?
So the score is 2-3 with me in favor. And so going over our predictions from last week, this is going to be real quick because obviously one game apiece. You predicted BYU would beat Cincinnati in a low scoring game of 17-10. Utah would lose to Oregon State 10-21. Got really close there. I predicted that both teams would win. I predicted a slightly higher scoring game of 24-17 with BYU versus Cincinnati. Utah versus Oregon State, I had a bit more faith in Utah's offense, scoring 21-17. It didn't quite happen that way. So now, Jason, if looking at this, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it looks like here we get a point apiece. Since obviously you predicted Oregon State would win, and it happened. We both had the same point differential, and neither of us got it exactly right. However, I think we need to give the point to me because I predicted the higher score. Yeah, it was the closer of the two.
Well, I'm less excited now. I thought I had two easy points. I forgot that you predicted that we were going to win. Dang it.
Yeah. Hey.
But I picked
No harm. No real harm done. The score is now 4-3.
A 1-point
lead. So no real harm done. Yep. I maintain my one game lead.
Well, let's get into our actual predictions for the coming weeks. Gonna be a little bit more difficult because multiple games to predict here. And lots of potential embarrassment for me because I'm horrible at these score predictions.
You're right. So, just as a recap for everybody, or at least not maybe not a recap, but just to let everyone know listening, the next two opponents for each team is BYU at TCU, so going into Texas for that game. Utah will host the Cal Bears. Then in week 8, BYU will host the Red Raiders of Texas Tech, and Utah will go into the Coliseum against the USC Trojans. Jason, how are you feeling? How are you feeling about these games?
We're about to find out for real this time who BYU is, because you win against Arkansas. Oh, boy.
This identity crisis, Jason.
You win against Arkansas. You lose against Kansas. You beat Cincinnati, who hasn't done a whole lot in the Big 12. This is where the schedule, you know, and those big matchups really start to come into play. So TCU, I gotta say, at the beginning of the season, I think that this score prediction would have been significantly different. But it has been confirmed TCU will be starting their backup quarterback versus BYU, and he did not look good versus Tech. They really, really struggled and did not look good. In that Tech game, and I think they've had some injuries the end of that, not the Tech game, but the week before that, West Virginia. Like, there were a decent amount of injuries for both teams during that game. So yeah, this score prediction, I'm feeling really good about going into TCU. Their home field environment is terrible. Like, it is, I think that there's going to be, again, as they're...
Well, recently.
Recently.
Not historically, though. They've had a very good home presence this week.
I don't know. I wouldn't even say, like, maybe back in, like, the Mountain West days more so, but even last year in their national championship run, like, they did not have full arenas as, like, an undefeated team towards the end of the season. Like, 8-9-0. They didn't have fans. Like, it's been interesting. I just feel like the fan support, it has me, this is like you opened a can of worms here, because I've had a ton of questions. Like, you're coming, I can't imagine if BYU last year went to the national championship game, every single game, even if BYU lost, like, 7 games in that season, every single game would be packed. The fan excitement level would be off the charts. So where are you, TCU fans? I don't understand. It is baffling to see those, you know, that game against West Virginia, and to see, like, the number of, I mean, just like almost the whole upper bowl completely empty. Like, just did not have fans there. Okay. So I think, anyway, so I think it's a road game, but I think that there's going to be, even with TCU trying not to sell tickets to BYU, which I don't know if you saw that wrinkle, but TCU legitimately did not sell BYU an allotment of tickets, and they threatened their season ticket holders that if they sold their tickets to BYU fans, that they would risk, like, having their season tickets revoked for the future. Like, they couldn't buy.
I don't know how you verify that.
Like, how it was a very veiled and empty threat. But apparently this is the thing that TCU does every year for one opponent. Like, they do this. Last year, I think it was Texas Tech. Like, they just, apparently they can do that, which I think is ridiculous, and I hope BYU pays the favor next year and says, sorry, TCU, no tickets for you. That's crazy.
Yeah,
anyway, seriously. So despite that, I know 500 missionaries from the Dallas-Fort Worth Mission are attending the game. There's going to be a decent BYU showing even with that. So, like, with it being a Big 12 road game, I don't think the atmosphere is going to be there. I just don't know that TCU's, like, all that good this year. Especially with some injuries and a backup quarterback who did just not look good. So I'm saying BYU at TCU, 31-20 win for BYU. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to give your score prediction for that too, I guess?
Yeah. So I also think BYU is going to win. I'm going to predict a little bit more higher scoring. I'm going to go mid-30s to mid-20s, 35-24.
Ooh, you're really playing the crunched numbers there. Oh, we're going to win and watch your number be closer. I'm going to be so annoyed. So why don't you give your Utah versus Cal prediction, and then I'll give mine, and we'll kind of stagger back and forth.
Sure. Okay. Well, this season has been really hard to predict for Utah. All right. Just one, your main quarterback is out and, you know, has been, maybe he comes in, maybe he doesn't. I'm just going to assume until he shows up, I'm going to assume he's not playing the rest of the season. I've just decided it. I'm going to assume he's not playing. However, I do think we'll get a lot of other players back. I think a lot of, you know, the bye week will have gotten a lot of pieces healthy again. I think, you know, everybody will have, you know, a piece to, I think everybody, you know, a lot more practice, a lot more preparation, specifically for this game. You know, you got to have a bounce back win at home. You can't lose at home. You know, you don't want to disappoint everybody. So I'm going to go with a 24-14. You know, Cal's a good team, but I just can't bet against the Utes at home against someone who's not in the upper half of the conference, I'd say. So I'm going to go 24-14.
I got to say, I think that Utah is definitely in a precarious spot. And if the team that played against Oregon State is the team that's going to be the team that shows up the rest of the season, I think there's a legitimate fear and chance of Utah scraping to be at 500 in conference play. Genuinely, Utah has a very tough remaining schedule. Like, I mean, Arizona State,
very true.
Colorado, those are maybe your two weakest, you know, remaining opponents.
I'd say so.
But the reason that Cal kind of, I don't know, concerns me from, and it's so hard to just compare, oh, well, this score was this versus Utah, and this score was this versus Cal with Oregon State. But that was an absolute shootout with Cal and Oregon State. So I, like, if that Cal offense shows up, can Utah's offense keep up with that is a major question. I think just based on production. Just based off of the team that played against Oregon State, I'm going to say that this is a loss for Utah versus Cal.
Okay.
And I'm going to say,
and I could see your reasoning there.
I'm going to say 21-35. And I genuinely, I could be completely wrong on that. And the Cal Oregon State game was just a random offensive fluke. And Cal really struggles, but that's what I'm going to put.
Okay. All right, Jason. What about week eight? How you feeling on week
eight? So this is another one that I think this is really a toss up for me. I'm gonna give. I put it as a win for BYU, 35-32. Literally just the 3-point. Like, I think the 3-point home spread is. That's where I'm putting it. I still think BYU's home field advantage is elite, and teams genuinely struggle with that. I wish I had the exact stat, but that the Cincinnati home game attendance was like top 10 nationally that week in home attendance. It was great. So. Okay. So yeah, that's where my spread is. 3-point home field advantage. I think Tech is really good. I do. I think really? They've kind of grown and come into a rhythm.
After some tough early season losses,
part of the season. I think really has almost helped them. It's felt like, but they've looked fairly good. So. Yeah, it's going to be tough. Definitely another one where I'm like, it's probably just my bias as a BYU fan that is making me put that loss for Utah and put this as a win for BYU. We could totally lose that game. I mean, it's going to be tough. So.
Well, Jason, see, this type of a game is actually what I think is the hardest part about doing the 2 weeks at a time.
Right. Where's the team going to be at? Injuries.
Yeah, exactly. I think because if I could see how they performed against TCU and a team like TCU, I think I'd be much more informed and I'd feel more confident in whatever prediction I would give for Texas Tech. But given all the reasons you stated, I'm also going to predict a narrow win. I'm going to go slightly lower scoring, although... You know, not too much. I'm going to go 31-28.
Like it. 3-point spread. We'll see who has the point differential.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see who's going over or under. Yeah. anyway, so Utah that week heads to the Coliseum, faces down Crybaby Caleb and the team money bags of the Trojans. And again, if I could see how they perform against Cal, it'd probably change. But as of right now, I'm going to predict a loss for my dear Utes. I hate saying that, but just for the sake of this wager here and you know my betting record, I can't, in good conscience, right now, predict a Utah victory. I'm going to go 42-20. Trojans have an axe to grind. They have a revenge game for them. They're at home. Whatever fan base that they can scrounge up against the homeless population of LA, we'll be dying to see this happen. They'll just be ready to go. And like I said, it could change. Maybe Utah comes out after this bye week as, you know, completely different team. You never know. It could happen. Complete 180. You know, the offense could just start firing on all cylinders and able to keep up with the Trojan offense. You never know. It could happen. But as of right now, until I see it, I can't in good conscience predict anything better than 42-20 loss to Utah.
Yeah, I have the same slightly different, and you might beat me on point differential there just from scoring.
Yeah, I think mine is a bit wider.
So I'm saying 24-38, but... Let me get on my USC soapbox for a minute. USC is not good. They are not good.
They're good. They're not great, though. They're good, but they're not great.
I've watched every game of USC. For whatever reason, the time slots, they've been fitted into a lot of tight, like late window slots.
Because they keep playing cupcakes.
So they have played nobody, and they have looked garbage in every single game that they've played. They've had a ton of offensive struggles. Their defense cannot stop anything. I do not see USC making it to the Pac-12 championship game. I do not. They have a massively difficult schedule to finish.
Coming up here very soon.
The season. Like, I will take... Yeah. Notre Dame's lost two in a row. I would take Notre Dame this week over USC. Genuinely, that's how bad I think that USC has looked, particularly on defense. But, like, USC's offense hasn't had flow. They've really relied on, like, a couple explosive plays from Caleb Williams to, like, kind of pull them and kind of drag them along to some wins versus just, frankly, some not good teams. And so that's my hot take. And I just, like, with the amount, like you said, money bags USC, with the amount of money and, like, hype and all this talent that they're supposed to have, like, I genuinely, I hope that, because I really don't like Caleb Williams, I don't like USC, I hope that they don't, but I, like, I genuinely don't see them finishing ahead of Oregon or Washington this year. Both of those teams have played way better. So there's my hot take. I hope Utah fans love that, because I know they don't have a lot of love for USC, but I think they're bad.
No, they definitely don't.
I think they're not that great this year. They could finish fourth in the conference. I think there are a plethora of teams that could finish better than USC. So
yeah. And this year is a very interesting year for the Pac-12. A really great farewell tour, as I've been calling it, the Pac-12 farewell tour, making it all nice and interesting at the very least.
Exactly. Well, guys, that's going to wrap it up for us. Hope you enjoyed, again, listening to... I mean, that was a lot of me kind of ranting about a couple things, but... Or not even ranting, just
as usual, Jason. I mean, let's be honest. You typically go on at least one or two rants.
I'm passionate. Per episode. I'm passionate about how bad
USC is. I mean, we can tell.
Your homeless fans comment killed me, dude. Oh, that was so
I did that off the cuff. I mean, I didn't even pre-plan that. That was not premeditative. That was, you know, it spur of the moment, passion of the instant. I don't know.
Well. I hope it's a better week than what we may have predicted here. I hope you guys are able to make it to a game. Thanks again for listening, guys. We will catch you in a couple weeks. And as usual, go Cougs.
And go Utes.
See you guys.
Thank you for listening to this State of Sports Utah production. SFX technical support provided by Samantha Knight.